This is just some background information. So, what's your full name?
Louis Schmier.
Okay. And do you have a nickname?
Louis.
All right.
Of course, it depends what students you talk to.
Right. and your mailing address?
203 East Brookwood Place, Valdosta, Georgia, 31602.
Is that Lowndes County?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Telephone number?
242-3049.
And your birthday?
11-140.
Your birthplace?
New York City.
How many years have you been living in this community?
Since 1967.
Okay. where else have you lived?
Well, I was born and bred on the east side of Manhattan in New York City. At 8 years old, we moved out to Long Island in Rockville Center. I stayed there until 1962 and then went to Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay. And then you moved here?
Then I moved here in 67.
All right. What's your wife's name?
Susan.
What are your parents' names?
My mother's name was Helen, and my father's name was Reuben.
How about your children? I know you have.
My oldest is Michael. My youngest is Reuben.
Okay. Your occupation?
I'm a professor at the university.
And any additional skills and activities that you participate in?
I garden.
Garden.
I'm a fixer-upper.
Mm-hmm.
So a handyman.
how about with the Temple Israel?
I'm currently president of the synagogue.
Okay. What's your education?
I got my AB. At Adelphi University, well, it was a college in those days, in 1962. Got my MA at St. John's University in 1963, and got my PhD from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, officially in 1969.
Okay. What's your ethnic background?
My mother's parents came from what's known as Warsaw Gubernia. Gubernia is Russian for province. My father's parents came from a little town known as Boblica, which was in Galicia, which was Polish, Russian, Austrian, Ukrainian, depending upon what year and where the border was.
And your religious affiliation?
Jewish.
And your hobbies are to garden and fix up stuff?
Amongst other things,
okay.
Yeah. I do sculpture.
Right. And this is Jenna Switzer, and it's March 4th, and we're at Dr. Schmier's house. Okay, let me check real fast and make sure the cord is working. And what's your family's migration history?
It's kind of vague because my folks really didn't talk about it. And in fact, last year I was contacted by long-lost relatives I didn't even know exist. But it goes something like this. My grandfather came to this country in 1888. All of his children, with the exception of one, was American born.
Okay.
And we all grew up in New York City.
And were your parents Jewish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
What type of Judaism do you practice?
I suppose formally it's known as conservatism, but it's more of a moralism rather than a ritualism or ceremonialism.
Mm-hmm. And does your wife practice the same same time?
Yes.
Okay. Do you keep kosher?
No.
Do you have any memories of the Jewish food traditions you participated in when you were a child?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
That's going to be a long question.
Oh, yeah. What do you want to know about that?
Some of the differences that you participated in.
Well, when I grew up, I grew up in what was known as the Jewish shtetl in New York. And I grew up at the tail end of the immigrant experience. I knew Yiddish almost before I knew English, because even though we lived with our grandparents, my mother's parents, they owned a building at Orchard Delancey Street. And my aunt Paulie and Uncle Victor lived below us. And whenever they were in the house, they always spoke Yiddish. So, whenever I went outside, the whole neighborhood essentially spoke Yiddish. So, I learned Yiddish virtually before I learned English. Mm-hmm. And then the foods we ate were, I don't know, some people would call them Jewish foods. They're really not. They were really the ethnic foods that my grandparents brought over. Foods like flanken, which was a boiled meat, borscht, which is a beet soup. Mm-hmm. Now, there were the Jewish delicatessens all around us, and so I ate the Jewish delicatessens. We had meals like kasha vanishkas. Kasha vanishkas is, how do I describe it? A vanishka is a boat. You can see it, little bows, you know, pasta-shaped bows. Kasha is a cracked buckwheat. And so you fried the kasha with onions, and then mixed it up with vanishkas. And so it was kasha vanishkas. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other foods we had? Pierogi. Pierogin is almost like an East European ravioli. Knishes, which was a sort of a dough-filled, I don't know how you describe it, but except to say it's delicious. It was filled with either farmer's cheese or potatoes. Mm-hmm. So we ate all those foods in the restaurants. A lot of the foods that some people would call Jewish were actually American invention, like the bagel. They didn't know from the bagel. I never ate a bagel, you know, all that much. So we had all those different kinds of foods, but primarily they were ethnic East European.
Mm-hmm. And did you celebrate the Jewish Seder as a child?
Yeah, we used to say my grandpa, while Moses had to walk across the Red Sea, my grandpa loaded us on a speedboat. It was my grandmother who was really very religious. My grandfather wasn't. And when we moved out onto the island. Now again, our Judaism was far more cultural than it was religious. I stopped going to synagogue when I was bar mitzvah and didn't step into a synagogue again until I was married. So that's 12 years.
Right. And does your extended family still celebrate the Seder?
Extended family.
As in like your sisters and brothers?
No. Yeah. My sister converted to, she's a Baptist, Southern Baptist. She converted then.
Okay.
My brother is totally non-practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And non-participating, non-everything.
How about your aunts and uncles? Did you live close to a lot of them during your childhood?
Well, like I said, my Aunt Polly lived below us. I'm trying to remember. One of the things you'll learn about oral history is you just wait.
Right.
We weren't like Brighton Beach. The associations we had with our relatives were close in some respects and not in others. There were times we celebrated the Passover with friends and relatives. At times we celebrated them alone. Now, in fact, when you talk about extended families, I had been led to believe that we were the only Schmears in New York. And like I said, last year someone contacted me, and suddenly I found that there were cousins and grand cousins, whatever you call them, that had been living in and around New York that I never even knew existed.
Wow.
That we never had contact with. And we all think there must be one hell of a knockdown, drag out fight in the old country that was brought over here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you describe the preparation of the cedar?
Of the cedar?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm gonna edit that out of tape.
The way we practice it is not as strict as the way Orthodox may practice it. If you were Orthodox, you would get rid of everything that was what was called chumitz. Now, my grandparents had two sets of dishes. They had two sets of silverware. But we could afford that. Not all families could. Here, we don't really have two sets. We have a set of fine china that we rarely use. So it's kind of become a our Passover set. When I grew up, we were well-to-do until my folks went bankrupt, but while we were well-to-do, my father had gotten my mother a 25th anniversary dinner set that was extraordinarily fine. It was mm-hmm. Limoges. And that dinner set was not exactly what you call everyday stuff, and that only came out at Passover.
Okay.
but we don't necessarily, we use essentially the sterling silverware. Mm-hmm. And the reason we do that is I hate to polish silver. But that's the time we polish silver, bring out the good dishes. We don't rid the house of all of the leavened foods. I love matzah, so we bring it in here by the box, enough for it to last throughout the whole year. I just finished the last one. And fundamentally, we don't keep the unleavened practice, except for the matzah. It's don't ask me why. It's cultural, it's symbolic, it's even hypocritical to some respect. You know, it's almost like being half pregnant. You know? But it's something that's cultural. And Susan will cook up a very, very special meal. It'll be a lot like what she's doing for you, and we'll have maybe about 15, 20 friends over for a Seder. Normally the first night is the most important as opposed to the second night, and with our new rabbi, we've been having a community Seder. So the whole congregation, or most of it, celebrates the Seder at the synagogue, and then the second night we'll break up into our little group of families and friends. We don't have any family here, so we'll either go to someone else's house and help prepare, or they'll come here. It kind of varies. That's the ritual plate, which the people who listen to the tape can't see.
Right. The white, we'll have a camera tomorrow. The white plate?
The white plate, yeah. Okay. That's the ritual plate. And that'll come out, and the matching candles, Susie. It, and then we'll sit down, and before we eat, we'll do the Seder. Seder means to tell. So we'll recite from the prayer books the tale of the Exodus. There'll be special foods that'll commemorate different aspects. There'll be an egg as a symbol of life, because the Passover is both a spring rite as well as a historical holiday as well as a religious holiday. And that's why it's kind of akin to Easter, but I won't get into religious history. There'll be Susan will make a food that's symbolic of the mortar that the Hebrews had to make, and it's called harosis, and it's made from nuts, apples, and wine.
Okay.
We'll dip the egg into salt water as a symbol of life, but as a remembrance that sometimes life ain't easy and there are sorrows and bitter tastes. Mm-hmm. The worst part of the Seder is you've got to take some of the matzah and dip it into horseradish, which to me is proof that God isn't perfect. Yeah. And tears, you know. They're called the bitter herbs as a reminder of slavery. So we'll go through that ritual, and then we'll have the ritual meal.
And will that happen just on the Seder, or will that happen tomorrow night?
No, that'll just be for the Seder. Okay. What will happen tomorrow night is we're putting on the Ritz for Shabbos meal. We don't always do the formal Shabbos, although Susie will light candles.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no ritual mm-hmm. Shabbos meal. The Shabbos meal is a celebration of the coming of the Sabbath, because in Judaism the holidays are celebrated much. Well, the only remnant in the Christian calendar is Halloween, All Hallows Eve, and Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
The holidays start from sundown and end at sundown. So tomorrow night is the beginning of the Sabbath, and it goes until... and we don't keep tight to sundown, like it'll be... we'll have services at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just for convenience, whether it's dark or not.
Do you know, you're talking about these different things, is that like basically uniform throughout all people who participate in it, or is that more?
the ritual plate, the Seder plate, generally is uniform. The Seder book itself evolves mm-hmm. over time, and it just depends how, you know, technically. The Seder meal on the first night should go until 2:00 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, the best part I left out, there's lots of wine. you're obliged to drink 4 cups of wine. And I remember my son getting drunk. But that's because you can incorporate songs and additional prayers. There's a service, what they call benching. It's sort of like a giving thanks service after the meal is over. And how long you want that to last depends upon your religiosity.
Mm-hmm. When I was reading some books about it, it said that there's a custom to save a place for Elijah.
Elijah.
Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah. It's called the Elinovo. And it's not really unique to the Passover Seder. It's almost, it's true of every holiday that we celebrate.
Okay.
Because one of the essences of Judaism is... it's called tzedakah. And tzedakah can be translated in different... there's really no word for it. So let's just call it charity.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it means doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And so technically, anytime we celebrate, the door is open for anyone who wants to come in and isn't needy and shares with the meal.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cup of Elijah is the symbolic cup. And part of the service says, all who wish to enter may come. And so when we pour the Elijah cup and open the door symbolically to let Elijah in,
mm-hmm.
because Elijah is sort of the prophet of charity, for want of a better term. And that cup is not partaken.
Mm-hmm.
So it stands there. Although my father used to come out about 2 o'clock in the morning and nip it and tell us kids that Elijah had come. So that cup will stay on the buffet for about 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought that was really interesting.
But see, that's true of if we're celebrating Hanukkah, that's true if we're doing Purim, that's true on Rosh Hashanah, the New Year,
mm-hmm.
or Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it's come symbolic,
mm-hmm.
a symbolic part of the of the Passover, because what you do is technically part of the service is to remember the Egyptians who were killed, and that our freedom was at their expense, but they also were children of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shouldn't really celebrate their death, we celebrate our freedom. And so we drop about 3-4 drops of wine into the plate that the Elijah cup is on,
mm-hmm.
as a symbol. I'll show you an Elijah cup.
Okay. Do you and your family have any unique practices that, you know, come from your ethnic background that is different from around here, how they practice, how others?
There used to be a family, but not so much. Well, some, and again, it's. I've been at a seder, my wife hasn't, where they served a ham instead of beef, which is kind of but again, that was because they were, for one of purposes. Ultra reform, they weren't kosher,
mm-hmm.
but that's all superficial, and that's not really the most important thing. Was they were practicing the Seder, they were saying the Seder,
mm-hmm.
they were doing the rituals, they were doing an abbreviated version, they were doing it all in English as opposed to all in Hebrew or mm-hmm. Hebrew, and we do Hebrew and English. Because while I know Hebrew, my wife doesn't,
mm-hmm.
and most of the people here don't. So it's more in the food than it is in the ritual table itself. Everyone will have the ritual plate. On there is the shank bone, the roasted egg, the horosis, the horseradish, the sprig of lettuce, and that will be the centerpiece of the table.
Okay.
Now, tomorrow we'll have a challah, which is an egg bread, which is sumptuous. Publix makes a good one.
So good. I was going to ask you where you buy it.
Yeah, Publix makes a good one. But of course, during the Passover, you'd have the matzah. And so that's not appreciably different because it's not the meal or the food per se as it is the service, mm-hmm. the Seder itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do people normally wear to the Seder? Is it just...
It depends upon the household. My philosophy is, it's not my wife's. You know, Moses walked around in bed sheets, so who cares?
You know? Like my dad.
You know, so I suppose one of the most poignant parts of the service is that the youngest, well, let me answer your question, then we'll do that. I've been to Seder's where it was coat and tie. This is a very informal house. So if the boss says it's okay, there's no coat and tie. If she says there it is, it is. So it just varies. In a more traditional Seder, when I grew up, my Zeta, my grandfather, would dress in a white gown as a sign of purity. The Passover was probably the only formal religious happening we had in the house. Mm-hmm. And he was the shamus, the caretaker of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. So, but at home, he wasn't orthodox, right, as such, even though the synagogue was. Mm-hmm. So, the two most prominent portions of the Seder is that the youngest son asked what's known as the Fir Kasha, the four questions. And essentially the four questions is, what are we doing? Why is this night so special? Why is it different from all other nights? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions is, why do we sit and lean? And then the Hoseda is the answering of those four questions. Okay. They're called the Manishtanos, mm-hmm, because in Hebrew, why is this night Manishtano?
How often do you participate in the Seder? And do you... And you said you've been out of the synagogue for a while, but...
That was between the time I was bar mitzvah at 13 and married at 26.
Okay. And why do you participate in these religious meals?
I don't know.
What does it mean to you?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think about it and I write about it. I don't know, there's almost a... I go into these things with... in my head. Now, this is just me, okay? Mm-hmm. I go into these things in my head. It's as if it's tradition. To me, this is not Judaism. To me, Judaism is living your religion, mm-hmm, not just doing the accoutrements.
Right.
Joseph Campbell said, organized church gets in the way of a religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, my Judaism is living it.
Mm-hmm.
The me is inseparable for me at work, in the classroom, me going around.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard, I'm a character educator, wholeness teacher.
I took your class.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm talking about. And what you see is, what mm-hmm, you see is what you get. And so I don't need these. And then again, I come out of these things spiritually in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. I don't know whether it's a walk down memory lane. I don't see it as a renewal of spirit or identity. I don't see these as making me more moral and ethical. In fact, if anything, I'm anti-ritual, anti-ceremonial. My favorite passage in scripture is Micah 6:8, and it's essentially anti-ritual. And it says you got to behave and live it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why. Part of it is because she says so. and when the boss says so, you say, yes, ma'am. And it's part of my cultural identity. It's
right.
One side of my hyphen, Jewish hyphen American. So it's that. It's not like I need to do it, mm-hmm, and yet at the same time, it is like I need to do it. There's a mystery about it, and sometimes you don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still Jewish because I went through a religious crisis.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a youngster, I was engaged to a Catholic girl and did a lot of soul searching, studied all the great religions, and decided
mm-hmm.
that I happened to agree with what I was. Most people come out of the womb and they are whatever they are,
mm-hmm.
and they really don't think about it and reflect upon it because they're afraid what they're going to find.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll just go to the church that and be that religion
mm-hmm.
that their folks were. They'll quote scripture and read Bible, but really don't have the spiritual grasp because they haven't questioned themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me make sure the tape's still. I'm gonna switch tapes.
Okay.
So we don't run out. My friend's mom had a mammogram because they haven't found out the results yet, though.
Oh.
But they should find out this week.
But the test was on my prostate. So far, everything's okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they said I was supposed to be hurting and aching. I had to take a Valium. Because she made me, not because I wanted to. It's thrown me off all day, and I hate it.
My next question is about your siblings and if they still practice, but I know that they don't.
No. Michael is probably what's called a Jewish Zen. So am I, really, to some extent. You know, there's a great deal of similarity between mm-hmm. Zen and Judaism. Which is what makes me attracted to Judaism, not because I came out of a Jewish womb, but because it's very horizontal, mm-hmm. it's very human. It's probably it's all about human relations far more than it is about man-God relations.
And is this Judaism or is this
Judaism?
Okay.
And so it fits into Zen
mm-hmm.
very very easily
okay.
without. Although Michael still celebrates. His wife is not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie, he'll be here for the Seder, and he'll fast on Yom Kippur and things
mm-hmm.
like that. But he doesn't go to synagogue. Neither does Michael.
Mm-hmm.
His fiance is not Jewish either. But that's okay. As long as they're good kids, I could
mm-hmm.
care less.
Mm-hmm. What brought you to Valdosta?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Just life.
What brought me to Valdosta? Well, you heard the story, so we'll just have to put it down. My wife and I got married, and we were in Chapel Hill, and I could not make it on a TA salary. So, and she was just finishing up. And so I went looking around and I found a school. It was a black school in Durham. And they had, so we had agreed that I would essentially be an adjunct for a year and be making twice what I was at the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So I resigned my TA, turned down some exchange fellowships. But when I went back to sign the contracts, they figured that since I had been a civil rights worker and had done voter registration, that I would magnanimously agree to work at half what we had agreed upon,
mm-hmm.
which was less than what I was making
mm-hmm.
at the Hill. Went back to the Hill, everything was gone. I mean, this was a matter of days. Got a phone call from a drinking buddy, a friend,
mm-hmm.
Who had just taken a position here. I knew about Valdosta because another buddy of mine had gone to Moody and said there was a position, and I was desperate. I mean,
mm-hmm.
desperate enough that I was even going to go to Georgia, which was one of the three states I swore next to. I didn't even think the streets were paved. So we came down here in a whirlwind, and I wouldn't take her downtown because I really didn't think the streets were paved. She wouldn't come here. And I figured also we'd be here for about a year or two. She'd finish up her year at the college. There were only 1,500 students at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd finish up the dissertation and then we'd get out. And I never told her until this year how scared I was.
when we came down here. Mm-hmm. You know, New Yorker, Yankee,
right.
Jewish, liberal, civil rights worker. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to get lynched. I really was scared. And then the economy dropped out, just phew, and there was no moving. And been here ever since. Now I got two born and bred mm-hmm. Georgia crackers.
Has living in South Georgia influenced the way you perform your religious meals? I kind of already asked you about that.
No, not me. I mean, I've seen it. How it affects other people. Mm-hmm. But see, a lot of people around here were born and bred in the Jewish community that was here, mm-hmm. and the contemporary Jewish community is almost a family affair. Mm-hmm. And it's been here since, well, it was really started in 1892. There were Jewish families, extraordinarily prominent Jewish families, living in Valdosta since the Civil War. But the contemporary Jewish community is really almost an extended family. And so they grew up here. And even though they were Orthodox, they built the synagogue, their children and grandchildren essentially became increasingly non-practicing, more reformed than anything else, even though they would say the contrary. They were not really learned in the ways of Judaism. They couldn't read Hebrew, and a lot of it was because the schooling wasn't here, and the environment, you know, that I grew up in, wasn't here. And Susie wanted a Jewish community, and by luck it happened to be here. And so we slowly but surely got involved in it, and slowly but surely all of those experiences I had were reawakened. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm stuck with the presidency of the synagogue.
Can you describe your involvement with that? What?
I'm very active. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a member of the board for gosh knows how many for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. I've served twice as president of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. I did a 4-year stint back in the 80s, and I'm doing a 4-year stint now.
Okay. What has been the reception of the larger community to the Jewish temple in Valdosta?
It depends upon the time you're looking at. Now, I've been here 36 years. Mm-hmm. This is a very church-oriented community. They call the synagogue a church.
Okay. I wrote down church to yeah. And I changed it.
What a lot of people would take to be anti-Semitic, I would take to be, for want of a better term, uninformed. Mm-hmm. Ignorance. The attitudes essentially were certainly benevolent. I know of no overt act of anti-Semitism in this town, and I ran for political office. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a closet Jew. And when we didn't have a rabbi, I would be the one that would go off to the churches and explain to them what Judaism was. Mm-hmm. A lot of them look upon Judaism, you know, through Christian eyes, and that there's almost a naivete and a childishness about it. But my sons were Jewish. They received awards. So that there was never, to my mind, any malevolence because we were Jewish. A lot of curiosity. Mm-hmm. and in the old days, you know, when you would talk about the 1880s, 1890s, they were welcomed for curious reasons. Mm-hmm. You say that more informed are now. We're here. And I think in many respects, the more informed members of the community take pride in it, as you know, the diversity.
Right.
You know, which there are Jews here. There's a mosque. There's a Mormon temple, but most of the community is really uninformed about Judaism, except what they learn about it in their Sunday schools,
right,
which is really a Christian take on it, and not Judaism per se. You know, they see Judaism as the heralding of Christianity. Of course, we don't.
Yeah.
I have fun sometimes, and put that in quotes, you know, in classes. You know, we had to go, am I going to go to hell? You know, why don't I believe in? And I'm not afraid to take a stand. I ran for political office and ran against a deacon, a very, one of the top executives in Valdosta, who was a deacon in the largest Baptist church. And so his campaign was, you know, I'm a Christian. Some people saw that as being anti-Semitic. I didn't. So it sometimes it exists. Have I experienced it? A little bit, but I don't think it's focal. And in historically, there was only one act. There was a cross burning on a the lawn of one member of the Jewish community, but that was because he was an avid supporter of John Kennedy, who was Catholic. Racism and anti-Catholicism is far stronger.
Really?
Yeah, much, much stronger than any kind of anti-Semitism. And I'm sure there's some jerks around here who talk about Christ killers, but, you know, they're just ignorant idiots.
Yeah. All right. That's basically it. Thank you very much for your time. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Okay.
Thank you.